Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time. Put those earbuds in, turn up the volume, because it's the time for another edition of Double Take Sports Talk with the Watch Brothers right now.
All right, let's go over what we got. Here's the headlines from the NFL and MLB.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Double Take Sports Talk.
So, Double Take Sports Talk. Until then,
he does what's going on.
Daryl, how you feeling?
Not too bad. Not too bad. How about yourself? How you feeling?
But I'm good. I'm good. It's time to cut this hair, but I'm good.
I get it. No doubt.
I'm good.
I'm definitely with you there.
Yeah. So before we start, I got to share this because I was extremely happy, and I still am, regardless of the fact. I am still happy, although some news that I can't really confirm, but I'm going to just say that I am extremely happy that the Atlanta Braves won the World Series draw.
Me too.
I'm very happy about that.
26 years in the making.
And I'm happy for that for two reasons. One, I'm happy for Atlanta because of the tribute to number 44. That's one reason why I'm happy.
Yeah.
Second reason why I am happy is because of Juan Washington. He finally won a ring. He was very close and had the opportunity when he was managing the Texas Rangers back in 2011. He had the opportunity to win a World Series and did not. He lost to the Cardinals, but you know, I was happy even then. I would have been happy either way. The Rangers because of Ron Washington, or St. Louis because they're my favorite team. But I was very happy for those two reasons. But then just this afternoon, I so happened to run on something that kind of disturbed me. The LA Times put out this article. The MLB strips Atlanta Braves of 12 prospects and bans the former GM for life. Pretty much the Braves is stripped the 12 prospects and their former general manager was banned for baseball for life on Tuesday for most significant penalties and an unprecedented punishment for what the league said was a three-year circumvention of international signing rules. The 12 prospects are free to sign with any other team. The most heralded among them was shortstop Kevin Mayton. He signed a $4.25 million contract in 2016. He was ranked by baseball's America's top international amateur prospect. So John Coppola, who resigned as the Braves general manager, now joins Pete Rose for the Betty scandal. Former St. Louis Cardinals scouting director Chris Correa for the hacking scandal, the former New York Mets pitcher Jeremy Mathia for a three violation of drug policies on the baseball's permanent ineligible list. I'm just like, here we go. Another racket scandal. So I just had to share that because I saw that and I'm like, I think this was worth sharing. Even though the Atlanta Braves won the World Series, I am still happy of that.
You damn right.
Still am.
Yes, sir.
Not stopping that.
Yes, sir. If anybody that actually needed to win was the Atlanta Braves.
Absolutely. They ain't won one since 1995. The Astros just won theirs in what, 2017 or 2018?
Something like that, yeah.
I think it was 2018. It could have very well been 2017. So, yeah. You got something you want to add or something you want to say? All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a listen to our platform talks. We want to bring awareness to mental health and also to racism and discrimination. So we're bringing back our platform talks and afternoon coffee break and Breaking Mental Health. Breaking Mental Health is Durrell's. Mine is afternoon coffee break with Darren Watts. We definitely want to bring those awarenesses back, and we're going to bring them back, doggone it. Whatever we got to do to bring them back, we are bringing them back. So we have a couple of clips starting with Mines with afternoon coffee breaks about the facts of amongst races and police brutality. That was my very first episode that I did, and then I would just want to remind people about the facts and that these things are real. So that's the first thing that's going to come about. And we're going to listen also to Durrell's segment, and probably most likely one of his most recent ones in alcohol and mental health, simply because of the next topic after we get through listening to his Henry Ruggs III. Enjoy, and we'll be back with you in a moment. What sparked me into starting this podcast? I said it earlier, but I'm going to give another reason why this sparked me to start this podcast. Colin Kaepernick. Let me be as authentic as I can be. I was angry that he kneeled because I did not want to see or hear anything about racism nor politics. I used sports as my getaway from that. But after George Floyd was lynched, I had to apologize to Colin Kaepernick on my podcast for being disrespectful to him when he needed to speak. Now, he did this peacefully and got a lot of backlash off of it. And that's what prompted me to start this podcast. Now, I talk a lot about this on the other podcast I co-host, Double Take Sports Talk with the Watts Brothers. That segment is called Platform Talk. At first, I was doing Platform Talk on racism, no matter what it was. Now that I started this podcast, I wanted to separate racism in sports and racism in America. Today's podcast is going to be simple. It's statistical facts among different categories of killings in America between races. So let's start our afternoon coffee break conversation. Fatal shootings in America was on a decline amongst white people that went down a percentage. There was a total of 4,563 fatal shootings as of May 2020. No change amongst color, people of color. During a five-year period, 5,367 total fatal shootings in the category of armed people split up by nationality, Native Americans' rate is three times the rate of white people, totaling 77 killed. Black people are killed at a rate of 2.5 times of white people. That's 1,265 killed. Hispanics' rate is 1.3 times of white people, 189. In the category of unarmed victims, which is very important, black people are killed by police three times the rate of white people, 218. Hispanics are killed at 1.45 times the rate of whites, 146. So when I hear somebody say, or when I hear somebody like Donald Trump say, "So are white people," I think of this statistic alone. Yeah, unarmed white people are killed, but not nearly the rate of blacks and Hispanics. He did an excellent job of an example of looking the other way when the issue is right there in front of you. That's for another podcast at another time. But let's continue on to the age range of race. Statistics show on average 34 years old. Blacks are at 30 years old. Hispanics average at 33. Native Americans average at 31. And whites average 38 years old. In 2020, black people were killed at 28%. Although black people make up 13% of the population. Does that make sense to anybody? Does that make sense? It does to me. Let me reference what I said earlier, just a few seconds ago. Black people are killed at a rate of 2.5 times of white people when armed, and black people are killed by police three times
the rate of white people. These killings can't happen like that. This is unacceptable to kill that many people of color just because they're perceived as a threat when they are not. If you look at police encounters on YouTube with white people who poses a threat, you will find out how they're taken in alive, whereas people of color are not. And it's not only really with black people. You still got the Hispanics, you still got the Native Americans. They still struggle with armed and unarmed killings as well. People of color amongst nationality. But here's the thing. I still hear people say, talk about black on black crime. We are all aware that this is an issue. We're aware of that. But the distraction you are causing is saying that unarmed black people are killed at an unbelievable rate, but it's true. Let me throw this out here as well. In Oklahoma State, police are likely to kill a black person 5 times the rate of police in the state of Georgia. 1 in every 10 black men is in prison or jail on any given day in his 30s. The average age of blacks is 30. Again, these are the facts and how hypocrisy plays a significant role in black people being treated. The Pledge of Allegiance reminds us all, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Not one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for whites only. Now, granted, in segregation, that's how it felt back in those days. But it still almost feels this way right now. No justice for blacks. Let's go back to why Colin Kaepernick kneeled during the national anthem. It has nothing to do with disrespecting the flag. In fact, the U.S. disrespects black people. There's no treated equally under the law. How many officers are being hailed for their actions? Not a lot. Remember this, when Donald Trump and other people believe that kneeling is a sign of disrespect. It's people like him. And those that don't believe in justice are the ones that disrespects the flag. Reminder of what happened with George Floyd. We'll talk about that on another podcast as well. But just remember Derek Chauvin kneeling on the neck of George Floyd. That's why Colin Kaepernick kneeled. Freddie Gray. Breonna Taylor. Ahmaud Arbery. Remember that these people did not get justice. Police is being on administrative paid leave, like how Colin Kaepernick said it. And yet they are on administrative leave being paid while killing black people at the same time. They get to go home. But the families of those are grieving at the same time because they felt that the skin of brown and blacks are a threat to them.
But let's take a look at the United States real quick. The United States, the alcohol use, prevalence of drinking. According to the 2019 National Survey on Drug Use and Health, 85.6% of people ages 18 and older reported that they drank alcohol at some point in their lifetime. 69.5% reported that they drank in the past year. And 54.9% also, 59.1% of men in this age group and 51% of women in this age group reported that they drank in the past month. Prevalence of binge drinking and alcohol, heavy alcohol use. In 2019, 25.8% of people ages 18 and older. 29.7% of men in this age group and 22.2% of women in this age group reported that they engaged in binge drinking in the past month. And 6.3%, which is 8.3% of men in this age group and 4.5% of women in this age group reported that they engaged in heavy alcohol use in the past month.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that. Thanks for listening. Again, as I always say on my podcast, you could be anywhere in the world, but you decided to be here and listen to us. So thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. All right. So let's go ahead.
Can I add to that? Can I add to that real quick?
Absolutely.
Like you say that, when I say on my podcast, it's like, you don't have to listen to my podcast. There are plenty of other podcasts that you can listen to about mental health.
That's true.
But you had to listen to mine, and that's something I appreciate.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go ahead and get into the NFL side real quick here. Let's talk about a couple of things, three things to debate, Daryl, really quickly, and then one piece of headline that I want to share that stood out to me. Firstly, we're going to start off with Henry Ruggs III. This is a headline that came out today. He is facing a felony charge of a DUI in a fiery crash that left one dead on Tuesday morning. That source came from the Las Vegas Police Department. There was two cars involved. Of course, one of them was the Toyota RAV4 and then the Chevrolet Corvette, which was driven by Henry Ruggs III. The report came around 3:39 in the morning at Rainbow Boulevard near Spring Valley Parkway in Las Vegas. The road was closed off of Rainbow between Tropical Avenue and Flamingo Road for several hours. Ruggs' car rear-ended the Toyota, killing one person inside. Now, Ruggs showed signs of impairment and expected to be charged with a felony DUI resulting in that death. The person killed was a woman. Ruggs also had a female passenger in the car who was injured as well and was transferred to the hospital. There is no word on her condition. Ruggs is 22 years old. He was the Raiders' first-round draft pick in the first round of the 2020 NFL draft, and he played college at the University of Alabama. Ruggs' attorney is doing their own investigation and asks everyone to reserve judgment until all facts are gathered. Henry Ruggs III was transported to the University Medical Center to be treated for non-life-threatening injuries. This is an ongoing investigation. That's what's going on so far. That's one of the biggest news that I had to share. That's that. Anything you want to add to that, Daryl? Maybe something that I missed, or we good?
Well, let me just add that he was driving 156 miles an hour.
Thank you. I'm glad you mentioned that because I forgot to mention that. Yeah. Driving 156 miles an hour. And again, let me read what part of Ruggs' attorney and what they said. They are asking to reserve judgment until all facts are gathered. All right.
That's a fact right there. Sorry. But
it is. 156 miles an hour, and he showed impairment. Them two things are facts for us to be able to draw our own judgment if we wanted to. Granted, he has a right to that defense, but of course, right now, we have what we have in front of us.
Yeah, we have just that.
Yes. Moving on. Jameis Winston. Whew. He is out for the rest of the season with a torn ACL. So how does this look for the Saints regardless of them beating the Buccaneers? Let me just say one thing about this real quick before you have your thought.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers is their rivalry. They play them twice a year. I expect them to beat them. I expect all of the division rivals to at least have an advantage on each other regardless of how hot they are. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it don't. But at the same time, their backup quarterback came in and did pretty good. They're pretty good against the Rams defense, a team that he probably never played before. I'm sorry, Bucks, a team that he never played before, and he really, you know, showed that he had somewhat of potential.
Was it Taysom Hill?
Hang on.
I forgot his name.
Yeah, I got this in my notes. Hang on, dude. I got it in my notes. I had to study it. Hang on just a second. I got my notes. Hang on. Oh, dagged on it. I didn't print it out. Shoot. But I believe it was Taysom Hill. Because I had to study him. So yeah. I believe it was him. He did pretty miraculous to me. But yeah. I don't know what he's gonna do, you know, against all these other teams that are, you know, better than, you know, Tampa Bay. Of course, nobody says that nobody's better than Tampa Bay, but of course you're gonna have those teams that are better than Tampa Bay. But
you got that right. You got that right.
Darryl, what's your thoughts?
Does this change the way that that the New Orleans Saints play football? No, it doesn't. And Sean Payton has said it during one of his interviews with the press and the media. He said that nothing's going to change within the system of changing quarterbacks and changing it to their desire. Nothing's ever going to change from that. So he feels the utmost confidence in all of his quarterbacks that he has, you know, during, you know, right now at this moment. And like you said, that was impressive, beating Tampa Bay like that, even though that it was a rival. And the Buccaneers have one of the toughest defense in the NFL. I want to say probably, I think, the top five of the top 10, mm-hmm. to say the least. Mm-hmm. That's just in defense alone, not even overall. That's just defense.
Right.
The top five, yeah. top 10. Mm-hmm. And considering that could have been a blowout in the making, but Jameis Winston got hurt, and then backup quarterback came in, and he showed out, and Tom Brady threw two picks. You know, this really starts to show not only deterioration, but that also shows that Tom Brady's two true colors, like you said, I think a couple of weeks ago, that his true colors are coming in when they play New England.
I set that in an aspect of the flank game.
Oh yeah, even that too. You can still add to the fact that the flank game, yeah, he showed his true colors.
Mm-hmm.
Now that he ain't got nothing to cheat on, it's not the same.
I'm sorry, but he always has something to cheat on because you're tainted.
Yeah,
things that you cheated on, you always going to remember. You know, they could take away all the tapes and all of that, but to me,
you're tainted.
It's in your head.
It's in your head.
It's tainted. You're there. It's done. And a lot of people like that. People have to move past that. No, you cannot move on past
that. You cannot move past that.
You cannot move on past that. Because if that was the case, then most of these relationships that people cheated on would still be together.
Bingo. Bingo. That's correct, Lacker. So now you have to sit here and you have to think about, I hate the most when the media do try to brainwash people, talk about Tom Brady, that he's the best, and people still believe that he's the best regardless of what he's done. And the fact that the Saints can actually go in as a underdog to a division rival and beat them and show Tom Brady who he really is, I hate it when they do that.
Mm-hmm.
He's won 6 Super Bowls, 5 of them tainted. Boom. Eliminated. It's bullshit. And it's annoying on how they can just think that they could easily just say 6 Super Bowl rings and Tom Brady's the best. And he's not. It's bullshit. It's annoying.
All right. Kyler Murray. Is he one of the best quarterbacks this season?
Better than Tom Brady.
I say he is. No doubt about it. I say that he's probably one of the best quarterbacks this season. I love what he's doing. He has really changed from last year. His legs make him a threat.
Absolutely.
It was just like Patrick Mahomes. His legs made him dangerous. Mm-hmm. And now that most teams, I don't know what happened with Patrick Mahomes. I'm going to have to find out why. Darryl, you have an idea and a damn good theory on why, but he's not what he used to be. And Kyler Murray is coming in with his legs and his dominant arm, and he's making the case. So I love what Kyler Murray's doing. I love what the Cardinals are doing, regardless to the COVID distractions and the J.J. Watt situation being injured and having surgery and ending his season like that. Cliff Kingston at one point having COVID. What was his name? What is his name? Linebacker for the Cardinals got COVID. What was his name? Chandler or something.
Chandler Jones.
Yes, thank you. Chandler Jones. He getting COVID. It just.
There's so much distractions that they're still winning doing football good. Games.
They still could have won against Green Bay if it wasn't that miscommunication. I'm just saying.
Yeah. A lot of people's like, oh, what happened here? What actually happened?
Miscommunication. Miscommunication between the wide receiver and the quarterback.
I have a thought. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Question. What would have happened if one of the Packers defender that was on AJ Green? What if he wasn't paying attention?
That just would have been an incomplete pass, and Arizona would have had a better chance of winning the game, and would have won the game.
That's the point I'm trying to bring. It's like even if he had good awareness on the football and saw it the whole time, what would have happened if he actually wasn't paying attention? That miscommunication would have been just as different if he wasn't paying attention to the football and got that pick.
Right.
And Arizona still would have had higher chances of winning that game, regardless of how you won the game.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, he's by far one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL
right now. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't put him lights out football.
I'm going to put him right up there with Matt Stafford.
I agree with you.
All right. Last topic of debate. Adrian Peterson. He signed with Tennessee Titans. He is now 36 years old. How well does he contribute to the Titans? He rushed for 604 yards and 156 carries last season and scored only 7 touchdowns. Again, he is 36 years old. Daryl, what do you think?
Well, it's obvious to say that Adrian Peterson is out of his prime. But I still believe that he is still in one of the best shapes that he's been in.
Yeah.
But his reactions is not the same. His reactions is not the same. Everything that he used to do, it's slower than how he was able to react to reading the defenders when it comes to running the football. Now, 604 yards, 156 carries last season, 7 touchdowns is not bad, especially for a 35-year-old at the time. Mm-hmm. Not bad at all. And he could still be one of the X factors going in, losing Derrick Henry. He could be actually the one that can actually still make plays when it's necessary. Now, is that going to decline Ryan Tannehill? Absolutely. I believe that's going to decline Ryan Tannehill because the run game is not going to be the same because Adrian Peterson is no Derrick Henry. Now, when Adrian Peterson is prime, he was Derrick Henry, but better. But this is not the same Adrian Peterson we're talking about here. But that would have to be proven when they do play. That has to be proven.
I agree, no doubt. I would say that like you said, Adrian Peterson is no Derrick Henry, for sure. And that I think what it's going to do to Tennessee's offense is that it's going to bring a bare average of run attack, because I believe that they run a power vertical attack on the run.
Yes, they do.
I believe they do. And because of that, that means that they are pretty much a run-heavy team. Mm-hmm. And now that's going to kind of, you know, backfire because, you know, Adrian Peterson is 36. I still believe that he can still bring in a little bit more fire, but we just know for a fact that he's not going to do what Derrick Henry can do just simply because he's been out of it for a while. And we're about halfway through the season now, so it's kind of, you know, like trying to, you know, how Stella got a groove back type of thing, you know, try to, you know, get back into things. So I think with Adrian Peterson, he's going to definitely have to carry the team. But how long will he be able to do that? Because then Ryan Tannehill is going to have to start taking over. And then that's what I think we're going to see really how Ryan Tannehill is as a quarterback for sure.
Yeah. And And by them being like a power heavy run offense, how much can you handle as a 36-year-old guy? And in reality, you're young as hell, okay? Mm-hmm. But in a physical sport aspect, you're getting old. So how can that actually be a big load for Adrian Peterson? Yeah. Do they have to change the way they do things now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because Derrick Henry's young. He can handle all them loads. But now that he's hurt, it could possibly be out for the season. You know, how does that fare for Adrian Peterson?
Yeah.
For a run heavy offense. Maybe he wants that opportunity. I sure hell hope he does, because they're going to need it. They're going to need it.
Right. Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to add?
No, sir.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with the NBA side with Durrell. We'll be right back.
All right, NBA talk. Here we go. Marcus Smart. This really ticked me off of how Marcus Smart can be sometimes. So, Marcus Smart is frustrated about the Celtics' loss, 14-point loss, after they blew a 14-point lead to the Bulls the other day. I want to say it was Monday night. And he said in one of his interviews, I quote, that Jason and Jalen are going to learn how to pass the ball because they don't want to pass the ball in any situation when it comes down to crunch time. But I got some things here that he needs to come to realization. Now, is it true that Jason Tatum was 1-for-8 in the fourth quarter? Yes. That's a big yes. Now, is it also true that Marcus Smart had 0 assists all game? No, but he did not have any assists in the fourth quarter. So that tells me that if you're trying to tell two guys on your team that you should be more responsible, I think you're heading in the wrong direction. I truly believe so. Now, do I agree to the fact that Marcus Smart said what he said? Yes. But is he the one that should have said that? He should have kept his mouth shut. I feel that should have been left for the head coach to say. If he addresses this problem, saying that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are the problem, that they do need to pass the ball during crunch time, to the reason why that they blew that game, it shouldn't have to be on Marcus Smart. Now, for me, and I think you, dear, he's skating on thin ice. Mm-hmm. Because we're not fans of him, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And he has shown that he wants to be more of a selfish player, in my personal opinion.
Right, yes.
That's what he's showing.
Yeah.
Now, believe it or not, they're under 500. They're 2-5 now. And they still have to get their groove back. They have to actually show that their competitiveness are way more better than their egos. And this is going to be a problem here on out. Now, it came out just a few minutes ago, 23 minutes ago from this recording, that the Celtics did have a team players only meeting. And they did discuss Marcus Smart comments and the collapse versus the Bulls.
Well, that just blows my whole thing and what I wanted to say.
Sorry.
That just blows everything.
Sorry. But, I mean, even though that this is one of the ones that are frustrations for the Celtics, the bigger question, Darren, do you think that the Boston Celtics have an actual legitimate chance to get into the playoffs with that conference?
Because they had that players only meeting, which I was going to say was that one way they could turn this thing around is for them to sit down and have a players only meeting to discuss everybody's personality type and you know, try to just get back into the basics of the game, period. You just have to get back into the basics of the game. If you're going to have this players meeting, personalities has to be learned, and the love relationship is going to have to be learned. What's the language of the love that you're going to have to learn from your teammates in order for you to get better? Because that's where the miscommunication is at. But what concerns me and irritates my soul is that Marcus Smart keeps going to the media to run his mouth when he should be talking to his players on the team. What are you doing? This players only meeting should have been right. That should have been it right there. Lay your cards on the table, just like with Will and Jada, the red table conversation. Boom, everything's out. Players only meeting. Boom, everything out. And they have to go to the media. We shouldn't even be talking about this. Granted, we can be talking about the fact that they blew that lead, but we shouldn't be talking about Marcus Smart's comments of his comments that he made to the media. We just should not be talking about that. But because they had this players only meeting, they have a chance to get back into it if and only if they have they are going to go back to the basics of the game and the fundamentals to be able to continue to win. Because I think they're doing a difficult formula that don't need to be done. I just think they need to go back to the basics.
You know what? And I agree with that. And I think something else that needs to happen. Now, I've said this for quite a while now, and it hasn't happened, but it needs to happen. They just got to trade for Marcus Smart. Mm-hmm. They need a veteran, period. They need a veteran to step it up. Marcus Smart, he's not taking things serious. Let me not say that. He's not taking things serious. He's just actually not taking it the way that he's supposed to. Like you said, players meeting only. That's what they needed to settle. That's it. Point blank, period. The Lakers. Los Angeles Lakers. They have shown signs of struggle during the beginning courses of their season. They were under 500, I think, the first two or three games of the season. And now they are 5-3 up to this point. And so now the bigger problem that we're having is that the egos of the chemistry between Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Russell Westbrook. Now, Russell Westbrook has shown signs of inconsistency, which he has been showing since he entered the league. But at the same time, the way that he carries himself and finishes these season triple-doubles shows that he can still turn things around. Then you got a deteriorating LeBron James that's still in the spotlight of cherry picking and still trying to take over the team at the same time, which is not cutting. And then you have Anthony Davis that's still with alongside LeBron James, struggling with injuries to the reason why they're off to the slow starts. And then have all three of them have their biggest games of 20 plus points in a win. So, is this Laker team, are they going to continue to struggle because of egos?
Oh, if that was for me, yes, absolutely. Yes, they are going to continue to struggle. They're going to continue to struggle because it's more about each person's ego, and it's really not about a team right now. And until they can get to a team chemistry type of communication, then right now we're going to continue to see a failing Lakers team. I am kind of like all these egos with Carmelo Anthony, Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James. That's four players. And they're all, wait a minute, aren't they all in the starting lineup?
No, Carmelo's actually coming off the bench.
Yeah. And so that's right, because he's a small forward. Of course, he ain't going to get that start on LeBron. So at this point, what do you do? Because you have personality traits that each player possesses. LeBron and Carmelo and Anthony Davis shooting. LeBron James and Anthony Davis defense. Russell Westbrook and LeBron James passing. These are personality quirks. These are personality traits that no player wants taken away from them. This is the problem with having a super team that should not exist. It shouldn't exist. Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, and passing, and triple doubles. Anthony Davis, LeBron James, rebounding, defense, Carmelo Anthony, all around. I mean, it's going to be hard for them to get back together. It could be possible, but I just don't see it right now.
Again, and that's the other bigger problem is that most of, not the media in that sense, maybe some media, but a lot of fans are practically saying, hey, this is Russell Westbrook's doing. He's inconsistent. He causes a lot of turnovers. He should be traded, which I think is a lot of garbage because, number one, Russell Westbrook can actually still maintain wins. He can still maintain a team like Chris Paul. He can still actually control the aspects on the court. Now, if you're playing with LeBron James and you're trying to get everybody to play the way LeBron James is, that, my personal opinion, is a problem. You know what I'm saying? If everybody can still play a small forward, but still be a point forward, but still let the point guard take over, big balls to you because that's how it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. That's how it's supposed to be. But if you don't have a point guard, then yeah, that's a possibility. That's a possibility. But I think Russell Westbrook still needs to control the aspects of this team regardless because he can still do it. Triple double average. Of the season, I will trust him despite his inconsistencies.
Right.
Chris Paul is my first segment, my new segment, what I call point guard presence. He last night just recently moved into third in assists, I think with 10,635. Ooh, I hope I got that right.
You said third
in assists with 10,635. I think he just passed Steve Nash.
I can fact check that.
Fact check that because I wanted to get that right, and I think I do.
Go ahead.
I think I do. But, yeah, he passed Steve Nash. So, yeah, I was actually right, but I don't know about the assist though. You still fact check that for me. Congratulations to Chris Paul and his legacy and the way that he is playing at a high level. Also, at 36 years old, he is still playing at a high level like any other player, unlike LeBron.
Stop it.
Going around telling people how to play while you're nursing an ankle injury and cherry picking, you know, you don't really necessarily throw yourself into the mix, even though everybody say he's going to have that legacy. But to me, in my personal opinion, I would have Chris Paul as one of my best as showing the legacy other than the late Kobe Bryant. In the way that he has been on every team that he has and led them to the playoffs. Darren, how does Chris Paul, in your personal opinion, even though you don't watch a lot of Chris Paul, and I didn't either, but how can Chris Paul show his ability by going to every team and taking over leadership? What do you think is the main trait that Chris Paul has actually obtained?
Mainly, for one, leadership. And two, the fact that he is not turnover prone as much as most point guards are in the league today and in the past. He is one of those few point guards that can take care of the basketball without having to be really wild with it. He's one of those few point guards that don't have to be fancy to pass the ball in order for it to in order for him to make him a fancy, you know, assist passer. He could pass the ball crisply without having to worry about getting the ball turned over because of a fancy pass that he wants to try. Then that's him. Nothing wrong with that. That is how he played the game. And that is really the basics and the fundamentals of playing the ball as a point guard. So I actually respect Chris Paul for that. And that says to me that his leadership and him being able to have an open mind and learn as a player and develop helps him be able to go on every team he's played and take them to the playoffs.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And the fact for me, dear floor general, he can actually go out, step on that court, and it's all Chris Paul.
Mm-hmm.
He's passing the ball. He's selecting his right spots to shoot the basketball. Mm-hmm. He sees an open look. He's attacking the basket. He sees a mid-range shot. He's taking it. That's why, in my personal opinion, if I ain't seen it on 2K yet, I'm pretty sure he has it. Giant Slayer. That's why he's a Giant Slayer, because he can shoot over defenders taller than him.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, if you're 6'11 or not, rather if you're 7 foot, he can still shoot that mid-range jumper and have the confidence to shoot it. And on top of that, you got a man that can actually sit and know when to pass the basketball.
Yeah.
Now, do I say that he learned from Magic Johnson? It's a possibility. Because Magic Johnson knew when to shoot the ball. He knew when to pass it.
Right.
He knew when to set the tempo. This is all Chris Paul.
Magic Johnson has his way of playing ball. His was very unique, and I love it.
Yeah, Magic Johnson was very unique, and Chris Paul has a unique approach. He just takes it differently than Magic Johnson.
Right.
He, like you said, he doesn't have to be fancy. He does what he has to do to actually go and make his teammates a lot better. He made DeAndre Ayton a lot better. But evidently, with them having problems with trying to get DeAndre Ayton the contract extension, thanks to Chris Paul, he should have earned that, because Chris Paul made him to what he is, a better player, and all that surrounds him, except Devin Booker, because he was already good before Chris Paul came in.
Right.
But Phoenix falls 3-3 right now. But that doesn't mean that they can actually go and bounce back and have a be better within the next 10 games or so. And that's what I believe. I believe they could be better within the next 10 games or so. They just have to kind of adjust to the trades and new acquirements from different teams to play that up-tempo offense of Chris Paul. And they have good defense, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that really takes away everything. And that's why I believe Chris Paul is by far one of the best that has played so far in this league. He's one of the best. So, looking down that line, my man Chris Paul, he's the one. But that's all I got.
Before we move on to the final, you know, the what's next for us, fact check. Daryl, you said 10,635. You were 289 over. He is actually at 10,346.
Ooh, yeah. I knew it was a 5 in there somewhere for a 6.
Yeah, he's at 10,346. You said 10,635. You knew there was a 6 in there somewhere, just didn't know where. Matter of fact, you knew there was a 6 and a 3 in there. You just got the 5 off of the one number of 6 in the 46.
Yeah. My life. Last and not least, the Indiana Pacers. Inconsistent basketball shows what the Indiana Pacers really are. Now, have they improved in some spots? Yeah. Yeah. But the bigger problem is how the hell are they going to improve on their inconsistencies? Now, they did beat the Spurs. Blew them out. But with them being 2-6 and only winning 25% of your games, the main inconsistent key has been scoring. when they played the Spurs, they had a balanced score. Everybody scored 10 or more plus points. Before that, it was either Demontis scoring 25 points, Miles Turner had 10, to Demontis having 20 and Miles Turner only having 4. Then you will have Malcolm Brogdon not playing to, yeah, he's playing because of injury. Now, you can't really necessarily blame that, but the inconsistency of scoring is the bigger problem. What do you think are also the inconsistency problems for the Pacers here?
The fact that they have a new head coach and they're just trying to learn his system. That's it.
Okay. No, I give it that too. At the same time, this inconsistent scoring still happened before Rick Carlisle too. And that to me still has to show, even though you're still under Rick Carlisle, that the scoring, I've always believed, has started with the point guards, which has gotten better. I don't deny that.
Nate Bjorken wanted them, Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis to be in the paint more. Now Carlisle wants to stretch them out. So the inconsistencies come from Rick Carlisle, even though it always has been there, but it comes from Rick Carlisle because Carlisle is having them do something different, which is why Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis have been shooting threes far more often, and he wants the entire team to shoot more threes as well, which is the thing that Michael Brogdon hardly has ever done. I don't know about Caris LeVert because I never really paid him any mind when he was out on the court playing at the time. I don't remember who it was for. I forgot. But they all have a new role under Rick Carlisle, which I put on him, which is going to take time for the players to develop this new shot trait that Rick Carlisle is asking of all of his players.
But as we speak of this podcast recording, end of the third quarter, Pacers leading the Knicks by 80-75. Balanced scoring has always been supposed to have been the key, and this has worked so far. Michael Brogdon has 11, Chris Duarte has 10, Caris LeVert has 15, which is another key that needed to get off injury. Domantas Sabonis has 7, and Miles Turner has 17. So your balance scoring, that's the big key. That's the big piece, scoring. Forget about the defense because the defense can play itself. But when we're talking about offense, we have to talk about scoring consistency. Now, even though Domantas Sabonis, 7 points, normally he would be maybe plus 14 more. Yeah, plus 14 more. Well, actually, plus 10 more at this time around in the quarter. But, you know, sometimes it's just there when somebody is actually taking the bigger bulk of scoring or somebody's actually taking the bigger bulk of attacking the basket. So, especially within the amount of minutes that Carlisle has them, because they have them anywhere from 25 to 22 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, and then you got your bench playing just as much. And Torrey Craig has 12 points. Another inconsistency, Justin Holiday. He finished the Spurs game with 17. He has none going into the third quarter. So I just wanted to just throw that out there. But I hope that this do improve because they should be better than 2-6.
That I agree. I agree.
They should be better than 2-6.
I agree.
But other than that, that's all I got.
All right. So we're going to prepare for our final part of our podcast. We'll be right back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, thank you for listening. You could be anywhere in the world, but you are here listening to us. So thank you so much for your time and listening to us. What's next, or what's on our podcast for next week? Next week, we're going to talk about the NFL scores from week 9 in the NFL. And we're also going to study the defense. That's going to be my brand new segment. And we're going to do it with Carson Wentz. We are going to study Carson Wentz and studying the defense and what he does on offense with a defense. And we're going to also break down a Pacer game. We're going to pick a game with Durrell, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to continue his point guard presence. We're going to talk Damian Lillard next week.
All right. So that's what is next week. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be a pretty good one. But until then, of course, we're on social media. You can always follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at DTSD14 and at the Watch Brothers, I believe it is. Of course, we got content podcast on YouTube. You can just type us in on the search, Double Take Sports Talk with the Watch Brothers, and subscribe to our channel, like our videos, share it, anything you got to do. We're very, very grateful for everybody to sit down and support us. Like I said, you ain't got to listen to our podcast. There are plenty of other sports podcasts out there, but you choose to listen to ours. And that is very appreciative. And also, you can check out our podcast on Anchor and any other podcast platform where you get your podcast. But that ends another edition of Double Take Sports Talk. Thank you for downloading and listening to our podcast. Of course, I am Daryl. There's on the other side.
Yep.
All right. Catch up with another episode of Double Take Sports Talk. Until then.
Ciao.
Ciao.